You're listening to an event podcast from the Brookings Institution.
Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Harold Trinkunas. I direct the Latin America Initiative here at the Brookings Institution in the Foreign Policy Program. And I'd like to welcome you all to our event today, an assessment of Colombia's anti-drug policies amid the peace talk with the FARC. I think this is a particularly opportune time to talk about this. Not only do we have a new report from Colombia's National Drug Policy Advisory Committee, which we're here to discuss today, but we also have the opportunity to benefit from learning from the experiences of a country which, to borrow a phrase that I've heard Daniel Mejia use before, has really learned more about drug policy and what works and what doesn't work than almost any other country in the world, just given its own historical experience with illicit drugs. Colombia is also one of the countries that's a leading proponent of reforming regional approaches to drug policy in the Americas, something that's reflected in the 2013 report from the OAS on drug policy in the Americas, and that is now becoming part of the international debate as we look forward to the special session of the UN General Assembly next year, which will review the international counter-narcotics treaties. So for a number of reasons, this is really a very opportune time to talk about what Colombia has learned and what the recommendations are for reforming Colombia's drug policies going forward, an issue that obviously is related in very complex deep ways to the ongoing and larger process of resolving Colombia's internal conflict and achieving peace. We have a very distinguished panel here today to talk about this. You have their bios in your info packet that was available on the way in, but let me just say a few brief words about each of them before turning the floor over to Daniel Mejia. Daniel Mejia is a professor at the University of the Andes, a distinguished economist in Colombia, but also somebody who has really made it his life's work to understand what works and what doesn't work when it comes national drug policies. He's the author of a paper in our Improving Global Drug Policy project focused on the issue of drugs, but he's here today to talk about his work as the head of Colombia's National Drug Policy Advisory Commission. He's joined in that capacity by Ana Maria Rueda, who is an advisor to the Ministry of Justice and Law of Colombia, who's focused on the work of the commission and on reviewing Colombia's drug policy. And prior to that, she had experience on electoral issues and democracy at the Carter Center. To discuss the findings of the report that Daniel and Ana Maria will present, I'm joined by my colleagues, Vanda Felbet Brown, from the Center for 21st Century Intelligence and Security here at Brookings, somebody who has studied issues related to illicit economies, drugs, and insurgency around the globe, but very specifically in Colombia. In fact, Vanda and I were in Colombia in May of this year working on that issue, among others. And finally, Frank Mora is a professor at Florida International University, co-sponsor with me of this panel here today. He directs the Kimberly Green Latin America and Caribbean Center. Frank is also somebody, as many of you know, is the former Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for Western Hemisphere Affairs at the Pentagon during the first part of the Obama administration, and somebody that has really a great deal of both academic and policy experience dealing with issues related to drug policy and security. So without much further ado, let me turn it over to Daniel and Ana Maria, who will lead off with about 20 minutes of comments, and then we'll turn it over to Vanda and Frank for 10 minutes each of discussion before going to a Q&A session. Thank you.
Thank you, Harold. And let me start by thanking Brookings and Florida International University for holding this event, and especially to my good friends and colleagues, Vanda, Harold, and Frank, for putting up this event and discussing the report. It's a great honor for us, for the Ministry of Justice and for the Commission, to present the findings and recommendations of the Drug Policy Advisory Commission. This was an independent commission set up by the Ministries of Justice and Health in 2013. And the commission was composed by 10 Colombian leading experts on different dimensions of drug policy in Colombia, and had two special guests that were not commissioners but were invited as guests, who were former President Gaviria, Cesar Gaviria, and the former director of the Colombian National Police, Oscar Naranjo. The commissioners had very different backgrounds and fields of expertise. In the commission, there were medical doctors, epidemiologists, political scientists, lawyers, and economists. Each of the commissioners had a different approach to the understanding of drug policy in Colombia, which helped us enrich the discussions, produce a final report that is broad enough to understand drugs and drug policy in Colombia, and propose a series of recommendations to the Colombian government. And these recommendations were aimed, or are aimed, at improving the formulation and implementation of more effective and less costly drug policies. As Harold was saying, Colombia has made significant efforts in the fight against drug production and trafficking, and in the fight against the criminal organizations involved in these two activities. This has resulted in important progress, in very important progress in reducing the levels of violence. The homicide rate in Colombia has gone down more than 60% in the last 15 years. Kidnappings, attacks against private and public infrastructure have gone down, and many other forms of violence that were once associated with drug trafficking organizations. With a very small risk of being wrong, I think we can say that no other country in the world has done more to fight the so-called war on drugs. On average, Colombia, with partial funding from the US, has invested about 1.2% of its GDP each year in the fight against illegal drugs. However, despite these high costs that the country has paid in order to reduce production and trafficking in terms of human lives, physical resources, and negative side effects, drug trafficking remains today a very profitable business that involves significant resources. The use of psychoactive substances in the country has shown a worrying trend of sustained growth in the last 20 years. The Commission considers that the limitations and negative side effects of some of these policies to combat drug trafficking and to address the growing problem of drug consumption in the country are clear evidence of the need to rethink some of the strategies implemented in light of new objectives and based on more flexible models of regulation. The main recommendations of the Commission, in our view, should help the Colombian government in the design and implementation of more effective and less expensive drug policies, giving priority to prevention rather than to strictly punitive answers. All the recommendations are based on detailed studies developed by each of the commissioners in their fields of expertise. I'm going to now briefly summarize the main policy recommendations behind the commission's report. The first one is that national drug policies, and especially those focused on reducing drug abuse, should be based on a public health approach and should be respectful of human rights. The national drug policy must be based on the best available evidence and must be supported by rigorous evaluations of the effectiveness and costs of the programs that are implemented. The Commission, and this is very important, considers that it is not necessary nor effective to get trapped between the two extremes of strict prohibition and criminalization on the one hand, or the full legalization of drug markets with no government regulation on the other. This is a false dilemma, as intermediate options are not only possible, both theoretically and practically, but also have proven to be more effective ways in confronting the problems of drug production, trafficking, distribution, and use. Here, the Commission has in mind intermediate options, such as the regulation of drug markets, treatment, prevention, and harm reduction to confront drug use, and a development-led approach to confront illicit crops cultivation. We were very strong on this. This does not mean being soft on crime and violence, as some have tried to put it. It's quite the opposite. It means using enforcement resources more efficiently by focusing on those actors that generate more violence and corruption, and not on the weakest and easy to target links in the drug trafficking chain. The Commission considers that the Colombian government should have a coordinating drug policy entity with the status of a presidential agency and with financial and administrative autonomy. Drug policies must make an explicit and operational differentiation of the tools that are used to address drug consumption issues on the one hand and drug production and trafficking activities on the other hand, especially when the latter directly provide the funds for criminal organizations. The Commission considers that the Colombian government must avoid the criminalization of drug use. This requires a differential approach in order to be able to distinguish between problematic and non-problematic drug use, dependent and not dependent use patterns, and finding complementary interventions when punishing individuals who commit crimes that are related to the drug dependency problem. The use of medical marijuana should be allowed and regulated, prioritizing policies to prevent diversion, especially to kids and underage populations. As for the issues of drug production and trafficking, policies against illegal crops require strategies that acknowledge human rights, and this implies a development-led approach based on comprehensive interventions in areas affected by the presence of these crops. Territorial control and the provision of basic public goods, such as security, justice, and infrastructure, are crucial components for alternative development projects to be effective and self-sustainable. At the time the report was released, the Commission considered that the Colombian government should reassess, based on a large body of evidence, whether to continue implementing the aerial spraying program as a strategy to reduce the cultivation of illicit crops. All available empirical studies show that the use of aerial spraying of herbicides as a strategy for reducing illicit crops is highly inefficient, extremely costly, and generates serious direct and collateral costs on health, the environment, and on the level of institutional trust by individuals who are exposed to the aerial spraying program. Last May, in May of this year, the Colombian government announced that it will stop the aerial spraying program in Colombia. The decision was taken based on the possible negative health effects that the program might have on the populations exposed to the program. The findings of different empirical studies indeed show that exposure to the herbicide that is used in the aerial spraying program in Colombia causes negative health effects such as dermatological problems, respiratory problems, miscarriages, and certain types of cancer. When making the announcement, the Colombian government set October of this year as the deadline for completely stopping the aerial spraying program. Among the strategies to address drug-related crime, the interest in reducing violence must prevail, even above reducing illicit drug flows. The Colombian government should concentrate on dismantling criminal structures by affecting local, regional, institutional, and organizational conditions that allow these groups to reproduce. The Commission recommends enacting a new law in order to create a unified, systematic, and comprehensive regime for the prevention of money laundering applicable to all economic sectors. The government should give money laundering due prominence on the national agenda, allocating the necessary resources needed to prevent and confront money laundering activities. Strategies against drug dealing, micro-trafficking, and transnational trafficking of illicit drugs should focus primarily on those links that create more violence and collateral damage. This should be done in order to reduce and discourage the use of violence as a strategy in the operation of illegal drug markets. Extradition as a legal way to fight against the leaders of drug trafficking organizations must be reconsidered, as recent developments seem to show that this strategy has lost effectiveness in dissuading individuals from getting involved in drug trafficking activities. The Commission recommends that the National Narcotics Statute must be updated based on the objectives of the national drug policy. The Colombian state must continue considering the international drug control regime developed by the UN drug conventions, as it is the duty of states to fulfill in good faith its international commitments. But given the limitations and serious collateral problems caused by the international prohibitionist and punitive regime, there is no reason why Colombia should passively adapt to these conventions, let alone accept extremely punitive interpretations, which are sometimes proposed without criticism. Colombia should continue leading an international debate about the drugs problem and the best ways to confront it. It is extremely important that this debate be informed by evidence, by the best available academic evidence about what works, what doesn't work, and at what cost in terms of drug policy. Finally, the Colombian government should also insist on a more flexible interpretation of the drug conventions. In particular, the interpretation of the drug conventions should be flexible enough so that countries can adapt their drug policies to their specific context and can reduce problematic drug use, reduce the direct and collateral cost of implementing drug policies, and respect their international obligation on human rights, insofar as they are prevalent over the drug conventions. These last three recommendations of the Commission are especially important in light of next year's special session of the UN General Assembly on the drugs problem. The drug policy debate is unavoidable and now more than ever needs informed analysis that transcend prejudices and the inertia of political decisions. This is, I think, the main recommendation, the main contribution of the report of the Commission. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Daniel. Turning now to Ana Maria Rueda.
Thank you. Good afternoon to everyone. And the Drug Policy Advisory Commission was created by the government of Colombia as a result of the interest of the president to continue to lead the drug policy reform internationally, but based on specific developments domestically. As a result, as Daniel mentioned, 10 experts were convened to analyze and give recommendations on specific topics that were regarded as the most relevant for drug policy. And as he mentioned as well, the commission was comprised by these 10 experts, and there were also special invitees that Daniel mentioned already who they were, plus the Ministries of Justice, Health, and Defense, who were permanent invitees to the meetings. And in fact, they attend to most of them, especially the Ministry of Health and the Ministry of Justice. During the first semester of 2013, the Commission decided to focus on analyzing drug consumption because this was regarded as a very important, critical topic to Colombia. It is today, and it was regarded as that at that moment because it's a growing concern right now, drug consumption in Colombia. So in May 2013, the Commission released this report, and the recommendations of this report have been taken on or taken into consideration to the drafting of the National Drug Consumption Plan of Colombia that was released in 2014 and right now is starting to, well, it hasn't really been implemented yet because of lack of resources, but it's been drafted and approved. For the rest of 2013 and 2014, the Commission discussed each of the Commissioner's papers and drafted the final report and the recommendations for the new drug policy in Colombia. The draft of the Commission, the papers, and the final report have been very important sources for two important processes in Colombia. One, the peace process. The team of President's office that has been in charge of dealing with the peace process received all the information of the commissions starting in 2013, from the draft papers to the final papers, and this was considered a very important source of information for those discussions that took place on the point number four, which was on drug policy, on the peace process agenda. The commission report was also almost the main source of information for the definition of the position of Colombia to the August of 2016. Concrete developments of drug policy reform in Colombia have started to take place slowly. But I would say that what has happened that I consider very important is that today there is a better understanding of the drug problem in the country. Also, there is an agreement, I would say a growing agreement, on the fact that this issue, the drug policy issue, is more a social matter than a control matter. There is also a growing recognition that the adoption of development, public health, and human rights perspectives is fundamental for an effective drug policy. Therefore, the creation of the Drug Policy Advisory Commission and other initiatives that the government of Colombia has created to gather evidence for policy change have first and foremost generated discussion, debate, and dialogue within the Colombia government, between the Colombian agencies, and with civil society. And I think this is not minor. As a result, new approaches to drug policy are right now on the table in Colombia, many of which are already agreed by key policymakers. This, I consider, is a significant advance in Colombia at the conceptual level. But challenges come when we start talking about implementation of drug policy. And so let me mention a couple of challenges that are important, and obviously they are not all of them. One of them is the future of the peace process, of course, if it's signed or if it's not. And if it is, it will definitely, the post-conflict era will give us, set up an environment for implementation of many different type of policies in Colombia, not just drug policy. So that would be definitely a challenge for drug policy reform. Another one is the growing political polarization that we're experiencing now in Colombia, in which drug policy topics are very sensitive ones. Another one is the institutional adjustment that is required to put this policy in place. Daniel and the Commission mentioned the need for a coordinating body with financial administrative autonomy. This is really difficult in Colombia, not to mention the fact that drug policy, since has had a control approach, right now is being implemented with more political force or power by certain agencies like the Ministry of Defense, and now that you're talking about different approaches like human rights or public health, you have to switch the policy, but then that means changes, real changes in the institutional in the institutional arrangement, and that will be critical as well. Another challenge is the effective integration of drug policy with the development agenda in the country. As I said, there is now already an agreement and a belief that drug policy is related strictly to the development agenda. But putting that in place is quite challenging institutionally. Another one is the design of impact indicators that instead of measuring processes as results, actually measure the reduction of the overall drug problem in Colombia. This, for example, applies very well to money laundering or to dismantling drug structures, criminal structures. Right now, we measure the work we do on those matters, measuring what the processes we do to get there, but we don't exactly measure that we actually got there, that we dismantled, or that we are being good in money laundering. We're great on processes on money laundering, and it's been a great development in Colombia, but we are not measuring the overall reduction of the problem as a comprehensive issue. Another challenge is the political pressure that the government will face by, at this moment, when it's trying to change policies, but coca crops are growing. That will be extremely challenging for the government. And finally, as the Commission recommended, the adoption of different interpretations of the conventions that allow for flexibility in the topics of interest in Colombia in a scenario of no changes after August 2016. That would be terribly challenging as well. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ana Maria. And I would just mention that the report and the executive summary are available on the website of the commission, is that correct?
Or the Observatory of Drugs is okay. odc.gov.co, and there is a button in there that says Commission Drugs, and you'll find
and
the report.
Will be available in English in That's the next couple weeks. Okay.
That's right.
Turning now to our discussants for this panel, Vanda Favet-Brown.
Good afternoon. I must say that I am both delighted by the report and struck. Delighted because I find the report eminently sensible in its recommendations, as well as based on not only great research, but also really exemplary participation of many different prominent experts and policymakers in Colombia. And I'm struck because the thrust of the report fundamentally repudiates what has often been characterized as Colombia's policy and the success story that Colombia was exporting around the world. During the administration of President Álvaro Uribe, the narrative was that in order to defeat conflict or in order to end conflict, drugs have to be eradicated and that aerial spraying was the best way to do so. And indeed, Colombia often volunteered itself or was volunteered as a model for places like Afghanistan, for example. In my view, that thesis and narrative, even as it was very much supported and embraced by Washington and the United States through Plan Colombia, but also other mechanisms, was always inaccurate and often counterproductive. But it is striking to hear it now from a national body endorsed by the Colombian government, even if perhaps endorsed with different level of closeness by different ministries within the Colombian government. With that, let me perhaps review with you some of the core elements of the policy and their impact on both conflict dynamics in the country and the negotiations with the FARC and the challenges and opportunities that the negotiations with the FARC bring to drug policy in the country. So indeed, the core narrative about so-called narco-terrorism was that in order to take away the finances of terrorist and insurgent groups like the FARC, it was crucial to destroy the financial basis of the group. we hear that often in very many different guises. It's the narrative that's dominant today about ISIS and oil in Syria, in Iraq, for example. In Colombia, by extension places like Afghanistan, it was specifically meant that the illicit crops had to be destroyed through eradication in order to bankrupt the FARC. Well, did that ever pan out? Clearly, there were periods after particularly intense spraying in various parts of the previous decades where FARC finances were temporarily hampered. In each case, the FARC, as well as other actors like the paramilitaries, found other ways to adapt to that, either simply by seeing crops recover, move to other areas, or eventually by expanding their portfolio into other activities such as illegal logging and illegal mining. But I think it's questionable to argue that the eradication campaign ever had more than short-term effects on the operational capacity and sustainability of the FARC. Interdiction, in my view, had far bigger effect, and then parsing out the effects of interdiction is tough because interdiction often melded together in the ways it was implemented and designed, both physical interdiction as well as physical interdiction of FARC units as well as interdiction against specific actors. But I think that the effect there was often far more pronounced, particularly as interdiction also came to be defined as essentially encircling and pinning certain frentes within areas of operation, Frente being the unit of FARC organization. And especially when that encirclement was done effectively, logistical chains were disrupted, finances were not passed on to other FARC frentes, and the operational impact was far more pronounced, in my view, than the operational impact through eradication. Nonetheless, even if the effect of eradication was limited in terms of the goals it claimed to accomplish, it was also deeply counterproductive because it became the only glue that held any remnants of Colombian society, rural society, to the insurgents. The Cocaleros became the only essential base, but nonetheless potent base for the FARC. And although the battlefield has been stalemated since 2007-2008, it is not clear at all that in the absence of peace, the FARC could really be defeated. They could perhaps be further weakened, but it's not obvious that they could be just obliterated on the military battlefield. And counter-narcotics policies played a negative impact in that. Alternative livelihoods were often part of the advocated mixture. They were funded often far less than the direct military and eradication and interdiction policy. Nonetheless, they were funded and they were implemented. Overall, the outcomes were terribly disappointing. I would say even far more so than in the context of other country, where rarely are alternative livelihoods programs designed well. But in Colombia, there was a set of structural as well as immediate operational problems that kept hampering alternative livelihoods. A crucial one was the demand that the so-called zero coca policy that demand that the community eradicates all coca before it qualifies for assistance. It was problematic because assistance could never materialize sufficiently fast to offset the real income losses of the community. Moreover, the assistance often amounted to essentially short-term humanitarian handouts, so immediate food supplies for 4, 5, 6 months, but really failed to address key issues such as value-added chains and titles, microcredit. There were many reasons why the latter was not happening, including, let's face it, the perseverance and effectiveness of vested interest in Colombia to hamper those. And so during the Uribe years, we saw money allocated for alternative livelihoods directly misdirected to some of the wealthiest landowners. And during other years, including recent Santos years, many of the problems simply died because vested interests blocked line ministries from adopting policies such as changing taxation patterns or resolving problems of titles. And indeed, it's worth to remember for the peace process, and I would argue for the day after the peace process is signed, that it ultimately emerged out of the realization by the Colombian government that the consolidation plan, the build phase of counterinsurgency, was getting nowhere. That line ministries could not be reined into really bringing the rural development that they were nominally committed by the national government to deliver. Now, what does that all mean for negotiations? As Ana Maria today said, drugs are a key component, a key point of the negotiations process, as is land reform, which on paper promises radical transformation of rural Colombia. Well, that is tough to implement, and some of the same problems that hampered the effectiveness of alternative livelihoods. Taxation, which taxes land extraordinarily little and labor extraordinarily heavily, the lack of access to microcredit, despite land restitution, the continuing problems with that, will make such a radical transformation difficult. The government with the FARC agreed to eliminate drugs within Colombia. That's the stated phrasing. It's an ambitious goal, likely unrealistic. The more important element, perhaps, is how that is to be accomplished. And indeed, in the agreed language, all methods of finding drugs remain, including eradication, although since then, as Daniel mentioned, aerial spraying has been suspended. So the government has really left itself a completely open hand of how it will deliver the promise of eliminating drugs within the country. But the sense is that this should be done through rural development, through alternative livelihoods, more so than through suppression. But again, how that is implemented yet very much remains to be seen. I think it's significant and how the context of both the peace process negotiation and what's been independently happening with drug policy reform in Colombia. Namely, the Cocalero mobilizations about a year and a half ago that for a while paralyzed the country. The initial response of the Santos government was very much that these are just fronts for the FARC. It was a very dismissive reaction that the government nonetheless significantly backpedaled from, reversed its position, and realized, and that's one of the interesting things, that many of the Cocalero groups now were agents in and of themselves, that they learned to have political power without needing to rely on the FARC. And to me, that's a crucial element also pushing the FARC further to negotiations and making it more difficult for the FARC to walk away from the negotiating table. This has been a long time in the making. In fact, it's been quite striking how the Colombian Cocalero groups have been far less politically active and organized in compared to their equivalents in Bolivia or Peru. And so their independent political power is a very good development, both for civil rights, human rights, in Colombia, but also, in my view, help by putting further pressure on the FARC, the negotiations process. Nonetheless, even if there is a deal, there are massive challenges that perhaps we can discuss in the Q&A. I just want to highlight one, and that's the persisting role of the bandas criminales, such as the Urabeños, in drug trafficking, but also in what kind of effects on the physical security of any DDR FARC they will have. The Santos administration deserves credit, significant credit, for targeting those groups strongly, even if there are talks of perhaps negotiating with them some years down the road. But it is not clear to me that if the pro-Uribista opposition conservative groups do very well in municipal elections, that national will be easier to execute at the municipal level, or that is also the case should another pro-Uribe or perhaps Uribe administration come to power after the end of the second term. So I would like to end that the Colombia narrative, if not perhaps Colombian narrative, for years has been that in order to end conflicts, drugs need to be ended first. In many other parts of the world, the history, in fact, shows the opposite, that conflict ended first before drug production and trafficking were significantly reduced, whether through gentle means, like in Thailand, through negotiations essentially allowing drugs to flourish, like in Colombia, and eventually, like in Burma, and eventually suppression, or in places like China, Peru, or Indonesia. In each case, whether the end was the mailed fist of the state or a gentle embrace of the state, the key was a state presence. The peace process with the FARC is another step, should it be successfully implemented, to move Colombia in that direction. But there is no guarantee that the peace process, once it is signed, will in fact be effectively implemented.
Thank you. And Frank, if you could take us out.
Sure. Thank you, Harold. Good afternoon, everybody. Harold, first of all, thank you for inviting me and for partnering with the center on this release of this important project. I want to also congratulate Daniela and his team and the commission. It's really an exhaustive study. I think it's 280 pages. And we really can't cover all the questions that are raised on my mind, for example, the issue of extradition, that I think would be interesting for us to discuss. This will be the first time I talk about Colombia since leaving government, and I'm happy I never shared a panel with Vanda during my time in government, because Colombia was, of course, a success story, as the report said. But I'm no longer in government. But I don't have enough time, so let me go to a couple of key points in the study that I think would be helpful for us to have a discussion during the Q&A. First of all, the report goes to something that really reminded me a lot of when I was in government and the challenge that I felt we faced. Because some of the things, and again, I think it's an exhaustive study, but this is not the first time we hear some of these ideas and some of these recommendations, right? The whole issue of integrated development, public health, human rights, right? These are elements of any serious, comprehensive anti-drug policy that we've heard before. So I don't want to say that you're not saying anything new, Daniel, but this is something that we've been hearing over and over again, and we keep saying it and nothing happens, right? And you mention in the study, or you make reference in the study, that in fact the government has thought and done things about public health, has done things about the public welfare development, improving quality of life, etc. However, the problem has been twofold, right? Twofold. First, the lack of adequate investment, resources to fund the plan, right? And two, the absence, and now these are the commission's words, not my words, but I agree, the absence of an institutional architecture to support the plan, right? And there's two dimensions to this, right? There's the issue of consumption, and then there's the issue of violence, right, associated with anti-drug policy. And here, I think this is where the challenge is, right? We have seen, what was that institution? Was it SICAI in Colombia? That integrated institution that Uribe started, and it was continued under Santos. The idea was an integrated plan to deal with not just drugs, but the issue of violence and the FARC. And the challenge there was governance. How do we address the issue of governance? And quite frankly, that didn't succeed. That didn't go too far, right? Was it a question of political will? Was it a question of resources? Was it a question of this is just too hard to do, right? This is just too, so let's just target on dealing with the issue of violence and particularly the FARC and leave everything else later. Let's postpone things, as Vanda says, in some cases, till after the conflict is over, and then we can address some of these issues. I think there are obstacles or impediments in the way. And some of them have already been mentioned by Ana Maria. One is the issue of political polarization. It seems to be getting worse as we get closer to the peace, right? And there doesn't seem to be a consensus or really a serious effort in this context to deal with some of the issues, which is lack of resources and an institutional architecture. Two, economic constraints. Colombia, as you know, is entering some fiscal challenges, right? The government is reducing costs, they're making budgetary priorities, and those budgetary priorities don't seem to be focused on much of what this report, I think, reflects. And how do they recapture from a financial standpoint what is required to do, which is no easy task from an institutional and resource perspective, right, in the context of economic stagnation, let's say. The other thing that I didn't see in the report, and maybe Daniel could maybe highlight if it is, you know, a lot of this at the end of the day is, even though consumption is increasing in Colombia, as they, I think, rightly mentioned, you know, what does it mean if consumption stays the same or rises outside of Colombia, right? This is an important driver of drug policy or drug production, I'm sorry, drug production in Colombia. If there is no change in external consumption, what does that mean for drug production in Colombia, right? In light of the fact that the state still doesn't have the capacity to deal with some of the challenge that you've mentioned and that I think Vanda mentioned as well. Peace. I think, to respond to Vanda, I think you can go either way, right? So is peace a good thing or a bad thing for anti-drug policy? Maybe we can have a discussion about that. You could go, I guess, or you could argue either way, right? You could say that with the end of the war, the state now can concentrate its efforts, its resources on this particular problem or challenge, because after all, there are still groups out there that are being funded by the drug. But you can also say that because the big driver of violence was drug production, that's where they funded their activities, that with the end of the big, large conflict, that maybe we shouldn't be spending too much time, that we should prioritize other areas, development areas, that perhaps deals with the issue of drug policy, but not in the way that Danielle and the commission, I think, are suggesting. So, you know, I don't want to be too cynical. That's Vanda's job. But I do think that it is true that been down this road before. We've been down the road of many of these recommendations. And my fear, my concern is that this goes up on some shelf and then that's it. So where do you get the political will? Where do you marshal the resources, both political and financial resources, to really commit to a project that is worthwhile, no question, and important, but that requires a commitment, frankly, that I have not yet seen in dealing with this particular problem. So let me, Harold, leave it at that and take on the questions and comments.
Great. Thank you so much to our panel for staying on time. And now we have a good 40 minutes for Q&A. I'll keep a list, and there'll be a microphone coming around. Please identify yourself and provide an institutional affiliation before you ask the question. I see two hands now, but I'll take the moderator's privilege to ask the first question, and directed, I guess, mainly at Daniel and Ana Maria. It strikes me that two of the key recommendations to focus more on a public health approach and to focus more on alternative development are both areas where you, as Franca said, the state has had has not had the institutional capacity in the past to really maybe carry out the kind of measures you're recommending. And the other is that these are often issues that are dealt with at a local or a municipal or provincial level, not necessarily at a national level in many countries. And so maybe if you could speak to us a bit more about what kinds of changes have there been in sort of the public health dimension of the state and in alternative development that give you maybe hope that this can be achieved now? And secondly, what has been the reaction of subnational authorities that might have to implement some of these recommendations going forward?
Thank you, Harold, and thanks, Vanda and Frank, for the comments and the remarks. Let me touch upon a couple of points that you, both of you, made. Frank, you mentioned, what's the question? Political will, resources, is it too hard to do to confront the drugs problem? Let me add one, which I don't think is the answer, but it's part of the answer, is vested interests from many different political actors and even countries, actually. I think I agree with both of you. We have too much rhetoric and too many commission reports. We have the Latin American Commission, the World Drug Commission, the LSE report. Now we have the Brookings report. We have the Colombian Commission report. When are we going to...
But the Brookings one is the best.
It's the best, of course. So when are we going to take the next step and transit from reports and papers and research into political decisions? And I think we could have blamed the Colombian government for being too rhetoric about the drug policy debate. But I think, with one exception, the decision to stop the aerial spraying program was a very hard decision for the president to take and for the government to take. There were internal disputes inside the government about the decision, but the president finally took the decision to stop the aerial spraying program. And this is not a small thing. The aerial spraying program was the main strategy, at least in the first 7 or 8 years of Plan Colombia, to fight drug production. So admitting that it wasn't as successful as we thought it was going to be, and admitting that it might create more harms than goods, I think it's a decision. It's a very hard and very important policy decision, and it's very brave. So I think, if we continue that way after the peace process, if the peace process is signed soon, I think more decisions are going to come soon. I think the president, that's my view, I don't know much about the internal politics in the government, but I think the president is putting all his efforts in the peace process, and after that he's going to start to make some other policy decisions in terms of drug policy. But that's not the case, and now I go into your point. In terms of drug policies to reduce drug consumption, if you look at the report, we have a description of the main the stylized facts behind drug consumption in Colombia. We have data from about 4 or 5 surveys between 1993 and 2013. I think it was the last one, mm-hmm. And most the data basically shows that drug consumption has between doubled and tripled, depending on the type of drug and how, if it's dependent use or just a casual use of drugs. But the government has not, I think, in my view, taken the policy decisions to confront the growing drug use problem. And I think this has to do with political will, I have to say. It takes resources, of course, to build up capacity to confront, to put up together prevention, treatment, harm reduction programs. But I think we have a Minister of Health who knows a lot about this issue. We actually wrote a book together in the past on drug policy in Colombia, but they have not taken the policy decisions that need to be taken to confront the growing drug problem. Why? Because there are too many things going on in Colombia. The fiscal problems, the problems with the health system, and thus has taken most of the efforts and the time for the Ministry of Health, and I think this has to change soon. Otherwise, the government is going to be blamed for being too rhetoric on changing the drug policy, the stance of drug policy, in terms of talking about a public health approach without actually putting up together the capacity to confront drug use.
Thank you. Maria, do you want to add anything?
Yeah, I would like to add something. In regard to the comment of Vanda on the narrative of Colombia of end drugs and conflict, I think progress has been made specifically on that narrative, which I think is good news. And I think that's actually the key, or one of the keys of the political polarization now, because the view of the conflict right now is polarized in the sense that those who think that the FARC or the conflict will end with force, and those of others who think that the conflict will end with development. And I think that's one of the key discussions that is going on and explains the polarization. It's a clear ideological difference between both parts that is explaining what's going on today. And as a result of that, I would agree with Daniel that if the peace process is signed and the government is ready for it, which is discussable, for the post-conflict era, then we will have a different path in policy, in the policy structure, because there will be set up a different way of seeing conflict in Colombia. I think that's very important. In regard to if it's too hard, if it's political will, what is the explanation for Colombia not to have done this better before, besides, I mean, despite all the all those reports out there. I think it is all of that, and it is also, and this is my personal view, not the government view, there is a characteristic of the political system in Colombia that is very difficult to change, which is it is a system that is not characterized by accountability. So it is a system where governors, government, politicians are not prized for doing things well. Corruption is still very much underway, and that definitely affects governance. So the government may have very good intentions of doing things, and as I said, have, I'm sure it has advanced of understanding the issue and conceptualizing in a different way. But what happens in implementation has a lot to do with all those things, political will, and political will has to do with the political structure, which still, there is a lot of corruption and many problems with it that do not allow for the national government and the local governments to put in place and implement the policy as nice as it can be. And I think I'll leave it there.
Okay, thank you. I think if first here on the left side of the room.
Thank you. Richard Downey from Delphi Strategic Consulting, and thank you for a very interesting discussion. I have actually a couple of questions and for Danielle. You'd mentioned that the report didn't want to go to either pole, either legalization or to punitive kind of interdiction types of approaches, but you wanted to do something more in the middle. And, you know, following up a little bit on Harold's question there, I don't know exactly what that means. What are, could you describe what are those mid-range types of options beyond treatment, prevention, and those sorts of things? And the second, it actually follows up on Frank's issue, is you mentioned that you recommended the change, a reconsideration of extradition. I mean, the extradition originally was intended to present a real fear to drug traffickers to say, when you're going to the United States, you're going to jail, and that's what you're doing, as opposed to in Colombia where it wasn't so bad. But you're suggesting a reconsideration. Could you talk a little bit about why that reconsideration is needed? Thank you.
Hi, thanks. Carl from CSIS, and previously used to work for UNHCR in Nariño in Colombia. So very happy to hear the conclusions of the commissions. I do have a question. It appears to me that drug-related violence in Colombia is very decentralized. So, for example, you have groups operating in what appears to be an institutional vacuum, such as the Aguilas Negras or Rastrojos or FARC. So as these new policies appear, how can we actually see them trickling down to the communities where it matters? My experience in Colombia is that, I mean, not only it triggers violence, but it also tends to be one of the hugest catastrophes in triggering internal displacement. Before the Syrian crisis, Colombia was still one of the top three countries in the world with the highest amount of internal displaced people. So how can these new policies make a difference, I guess, and given that we still suffer from a very sort of decentralized context of violence where some groups tend to be completely operating, finding new drug routes, new routes of producing coke. And yes, so I would be happy to hear the panel's opinion on that.
Thank you for a very enriching panel. I'm Ginny Bouvier from the U.S. Institute of Peace, and I have a couple of questions. The first, the provisional accords that have been reached in Havana on illicit crops and drug trafficking give an important role to the role of communities in determining what kind of practice will be used to address the issue. I'm wondering if the Commission's report also picks up on that role for the communities in these decisions. And secondly, the Colombian government and the Commission have reached the conclusion that the aerial fumigation has not been effective. I'm wondering, and Wanda in particular, you may be the one to answer this, to what extent this assessment is shared by the international community and specifically the United States policymakers. Thanks.
Thank you, Jenny, for that excellent set of questions. Let's go to the panel now. Maybe we can start with Frank and work our way back the other direction. No?
She mentioned something about U.S. policy.
Okay. Well, we'll start with Dania then.
Okay. So let me try to answer the questions. What does it have? What does it mean to have an intermediate approach? I mean, the Commission. The point of the Commission here is that it's not necessary to get trapped between the two extremes of full legalization or full prohibition. And I think it means, in terms of drug consumption, not criminalizing drug consumers, but use a public health approach, use treatment, prevention, harm reduction, and other public health approaches to confront drug consumption. This doesn't mean, and this we had a lot of discussion about it, this doesn't mean that a person who commits a crime under the influence of a drug or who commits a crime to buy drugs doesn't have to be punished. What the Commission says is if a person commits a crime that is associated with the drug dependency problem, that person should be punished, but in addition to punishment, that person should receive complementary interventions in order to help that person to reduce his or her drug consumption habit. In terms of production and trafficking, I think this is very much related to the points that Wanda was raising. I think the whole point of, and that's the part that I worked in the Commission on, I think it means to be more intelligent in the way we confront drug production and trafficking activities. Most of the focus of the anti-drug strategy in Colombia, since Plan Colombia, has been focused on coca cultivation, the coca crops, the very initial stage of cocaine production and trafficking. And this hasn't been effective. There are at least 12 or 15 academic papers written by many different people with different empirical strategies, different approaches, etc. And all of them show that the spraying program and forced eradication have not been effective policies to reduce cocaine consumption. And the focus of the point of the Commission is that in order to be more intelligent in the fight against is not to reduce the flows, is to reduce the funds for organized criminal groups. And in order to do so, we should focus more on interdiction. Let me give you an example. When a hectare with coca crops is destroyed, they lose between $400 and $500. When a cocaine shipment in the Pacific is lost with, 2 tons of cocaine, they lose a lot of money. So, and most of the focus of the anti-drug strategy in Colombia was in the initial stages of cocaine production, which was very ineffective. So the Commission recommends, if we're going to continue fighting drug production and trafficking, at least do it intelligently and more efficiently. That means finding more intelligent approaches to interdiction and eradication. Extradition. That's not, I have to say that this is not my field of expertise, but This was a paper written by Wilson Martinez, who was former deputy attorney general in Colombia, so he knows a lot about these issues. And his point was basically that extradition has lost effectiveness in dissuading drug traffickers from getting involved. And I remember some of his positions were that small drug traffickers are now negotiating with U.S. authorities in the Bahamas or in the Caribbean to, in exchange for giving a little bit of information to U.S. authorities, they get very little time in jail, and they are not sent back to Colombia once they finish their sentence in the U.S. And this has a lot of problems for Colombia, because the charges against these guys in the U.S. are for trafficking, 2, 3, 4 tons of cocaine, but the charges in Colombia are for having killed 10, 20, 30 people. So if they are not sent back to Colombia to pay time in jail, that's not a good negotiation for Colombia, actually. And I think that was the point, that we should reconsider or at least negotiate with the U.S. that they should be sent back to Colombia to pay for what they did in Colombia. I think that was the point. drug-related violence in Colombia has decentralized. That's completely correct. But this is a recent phenomenon, I think. There is a process of atomization of drug trafficking and drug production groups. And I think this creates a lot of challenges for local communities and for local authorities, actually. And for the role of communities, there was actually one of the commissioners, Alvaro Alcázar, actually has a paper. That's the paper. The papers are going to be translated as well. That focuses a lot on the policies, alternative development programs, and what he calls, and this is very much related to the peace process rhetoric, which is territorial development. This is very much in part of that. And that involves, of course, the role of communities, that they should be the ones who actively participate in the type of policies that are chosen and implemented to promote, in the end, licit rural development in Colombia. And they should take a big role in this.
Yeah, I'll try to bundle several of the questions, including the local versus national, and that's very much linked to issues, Frank, of capacity and will. I think that we are often seeing far more will at the national level, limited and incomplete as it might be in various domains, than at the local level. And the process of parapolitics or de-parapolitics, cleansing from parapolitics, is not over. Groups like the Urapeños, Brastrojos, Aguilas Negras have often a lot of political impact and do a lot of bad things, including trafficking drugs. And so how the national state level will be extended to the local level, what happens in the municipal elections, and particularly if there is a different administration, the conservative pro-Uribe national administration, in a few years, that can have quite significant repercussions for many aspects of implementation of any deal, including implications for drug trafficking. Yes, there is agreement to give communities a broad role in what kind of counter-narcotics policies should be adopted, or perhaps what kind of drug policies, in certain phrasing, could be adopted. And in some ways, some really good outcomes could come out of that. For example, when Antonio Navarro was the governor of Nariño, which was brought in, he fought very hard to stop Zero Coca, to allow development programs to be inserted to communities that did not eradicate all coca, an approach that has been widely successful in Thailand, and it was always blocked at the national level of Colombia. So to the extent that there is this space given, that could be very positive. But it is very unlikely that the local community will be given space to design its interdiction policy. And as we see in the United States with marijuana legalization in several US states, that policy still needs to be consistent with international obligations and national law. So I think it's very important to give communities voices, what kind of practical latitude that will have yet very much remains to be seen and could go in good ways, like moving away from Zero Coca, at least in some municipalities. I think that should be policy at the national level, but nonetheless at least at the municipal level. But it also could be very problematic. How about if the local community captured by Banda Criminale decides that, we don't do any more interdiction at all, for example, with violence repercussions, et cetera. I think it's significant and discouraging that even the Santos government that has embraced, committed itself to the peace process, really made it at the center of its policies and speaks about the radical transformation of the rural areas, suspended the Macarena plan. That was the core and arguably most successful state-building enterprise of the Colombian government. Even that was challenged. Lots of it was ultimately funded by USAID because the Colombian government struggled to find Colombian money for its flagship state-building program. often the Colombian military was left to hold back because line ministries, even in Macarena, often really could not be whipped into complying with directives from Bogota. But nonetheless, it was still producing far more results than any of the other strategic zones within the consolidation plan. And now that is next. Why? What kind of message does that send about commitment to radical transformation of the countryside? And here I come, Frank, to your very challenging point about could there be a peace, what's the opposite of dividend? Detriment, I suppose, is the word that I'm looking for. I do fundamentally believe that state presence is crucial for effectiveness in transforming the criminal landscape, the drug market, whether that's done gently through alternative livelihoods or done brutally through much more effective eradication. It remains to be seen, but I don't think it can be effective without state presence. However, it's quite possible that a peace process is signed with all the right language on paper, and that as violence abets in the short time, the Colombian elite will really lose even the existing level of will, and we will not see the implementation of the promised development of the rural areas. We will see once again a neglect of the periphery without sufficiently representative voice, and ultimately festering of drug cultivation, but far more importantly, of significant economic underdevelopment. We will not see changes at level in taxation, so Colombia will be growing economically, but job creation will be very minimal. That means that large segments of the population and the cocaleros will be sentenced to continuing in something like illegality in the edges of Nariño. And that verdict is still out. That's where civil society and many sectors, parties to the negotiations, really need to press that there is long-term, sustained, decades-long project to be far more accountable and far more equitable in Colombia than we have seen. And one last word on the extradition. I think where it's raising difficulties, in addition to the issue of justice and access to at least truth from perpetrators of the, especially the AUC, is that there is fear that this will make the deal incredible for the FARC leadership, which already is reluctant to submit to any accountability within Colombia. That's one of the difficult sticking points. But there is also fear that regardless of what the deal and punishment they accept within Colombia, they will later on be extradited to the United States. And they want to see assurance that this will not happen. Whether that assurance is wise to give or not is something else. But that's often raised as one of the obstacles to moving the immunity accountability point forward.
I can talk about Macarena for days, but I won't, so.
There's a person in the back, and then there's a person.
Thank you. I'm Francisco Tumi. I'm a member of the International Narcotics Control Board, nominated by Colombia, by President Santos. My colleagues, my friends here in the who think always that I am an atypical member of the board. I am trying to make a few questions. First is, why was so much emphasis on crops? Because, as far as I know, in Colombia concentrated the world cocaine production before it had any significant crops, coca crops. Indeed, we Colombians accepted the cocaine industry almost as a godsend sometimes. For sometimes, the problem arose simply when the cartels wanted to be accepted and to gain political power, and that's when extradition was signed, and that's where violence started. I thoroughly agree that policies are bad, and I've written for 30 years about it. But want to ask Daniel, I mean, you have done a lot of work showing that policies can be improved. The question is whether that improvement will solve the problem, and I doubt that. Even if there is full legalization, that means that at the conventions, in the conventions there will be a completely new system that allows for full legalization. Even if that happens, most countries in the world will be strongly prohibitionist, and there'll be a very large black market. And the Colombians will continue being the main actors there. Following up on what Vanda said, I just wonder if it's at all possible to solve the Colombian problem without strengthening governance, governability, basically without developing a nation-building project that the country has never had for the 200 years of independence. What Ana Maria mentions suggests that that is very difficult and that that is not going to happen. So if that is the case, my conclusion is that yes, we could improve policies, but unless we have some substantial social reforms, Colombia simply cannot go and ask the world, please, world, legalize because we kill each other and we cannot change. I'm afraid that we must change, or unless we just continue with our conflict. Drugs did not cause any of the problems of Colombia. It only enhanced all of them. Thank you.
Thank you. I think we had a question in the back, and then I think we have a couple here in the middle.
Hi, David Borden with StopTheDrugWar.org. One of the topics I think I heard raised, if I heard correctly from back here, was one of the recommendations in the commission was to review the international drug control architecture, including the conventions, with an eye toward increasing the flexibility for countries to try out different policies. At a thematic debate at the UN in New York last May, a number of countries called for a UN expert advisory committee to study this very topic. Reportedly, this was a topic of discussion at a conference involving policymakers in Costa Rica this summer, although I imagine some of you here would know better than I would about that. My question is whether this idea is being considered by the Colombian government and what prospects there may be for Colombia joining the set of countries that are supporting it.
Thank you. June Beidle with the Congressional Research Service. Vanda, you made the point about, I want to return to the issue of the upcoming municipal elections. It's sometimes said that the mayor of Bogota is the second most powerful political actor in the country. How do you think the outcome of the mayor's race might affect the polarization inside the country and the drug debate that you've talked about?
Hi, good afternoon. I'm Richard Bowen from the Office of National Drug Control Policy, and I wanted to ask about this transition to more of a public health approach, which the panel discussed, and recognizing that building capacity, developing alternatives, ensuring there's a good treatment system is a big investment. But I wanted to ask, is a lot of the problem legislation, where new statutory authority is needed for sentencing alternatives, or is it more of a changing the way the police operate, the courts operate? What are those obstacles, and what are the immediate next steps to sort of put Colombia on a path towards more of a public health approach? Thank you.
Great. I think we just have time for, if each of you just takes 2 minutes to answer the parts of the question you want to answer, we'll just proceed straight down the panel and give Frank the next to final word.
Okay, thank you. That's a big question, Francisco. Why did we focus so much on crops at least for the first 8 years of Plan Colombia? And the answer is I have no idea. I think the rationale was that by stopping the very initial stage, you were going to destroy drug production and trafficking, and that didn't work. Just all evaluations show that that didn't work. Okay? Will changes in the focus of drug policy solve the problem? I don't think so. But it will reduce the costs of drug policies. By focusing more on interdiction and less on eradication, you reduce the human rights and health concerns of the populations. Maybe you can become a little bit more effective in reducing drug flows by focusing on a public health approach instead of focusing on a penal approach to drug consumption. I think that's going to be helpful in reducing human rights violations as well. So I think no one is asking to completely eliminate the drugs problem. I don't think that's feasible. But at least reduce the costs of implementing drug policies and reduce the costs of drug consumption. I don't think Colombia is demanding, Ana Maria can say this with much more authority, but I don't think, from what I've heard, Colombia is not asking for the reformulation of the drug conventions or anything like this. It's just asking for more flexibility in the interpretation of the conventions. I haven't heard the Colombian government saying that it's asking for the for reforming the drug control system. Ana Maria will answer better this question. I think the commission has that recommendation. I think there has to be a reform on what we call Ley 30 that the Ministry of Justice has been working on. But I think Ana Maria will have something else to say about this.
Okay. And your mayor?
I don't think local elections in June are going to affect the drug policy debate. Petro has been, everyone can see that I don't like Petro, but Petro has been very vocal about, we build the CAMATs and we are treating drug addicts. But this is pure rhetoric. I mean, what he has done is not at all based on evidence by, for instance, giving marijuana to Bazooka consumers, that has no evidence base. That's not evidence based. So I don't think the local elections are going to affect drug policy. Maybe at the local level there will be mayors that will improve and some mayors that will do things better. But I don't think that's going to change the drug policy debate in Colombia to a large extent.
Okay, I will try to answer the question of Professor Toomey. Just for the fun of it, because I know you know better than me always. But I think the reason why we focus, the reason why we focus so much on crops is because, in terms of policy, I think it's a lot easier to destroy what you can see, but not to fix the problem, which is things that are intangible. So generating development, giving opportunities to people is something that takes a long time, and as you say, a national project. Eradicating crops or doing interdiction to boxes of cocaine is something easy and easy to count as well, and easy to show success. And I think that's what we've been doing. So that would be my attempt to answer your question. In regard to UNGAS, Colombia is actually supporting the idea of forming a special committee to analyze is a proposal that will go to the UNGAS, and it's already on the non-paper of Colombia. And the idea of this special committee is to form a group of experts, including civil society, within the United Nations system that will be able to evaluate the purposes or goals of the system. That's specifically what it is for, and it is supported by Colombia and Mexico and Guatemala. So the answer is yes to your question. In regard to the public health approach, Colombia has been, way before the recommendation of the Commission, very progressive about the public health approach, but again, at the conceptual level. So there was a policy in place drafted and approved in 2007, and a new one just last year in 2014 that includes all the, well, it it really characterizes a public health approach. The issue with the policy right now, as Frank mentioned before, in regard to all the policies, is that there is no resources to implement it. However, there have been some advances in Colombia on strengthening the local initiatives and local capacity for implementation of these policies since 2007. Never completely done, but I have to say that those efforts have to be recognized, because they have been really many advances. As an example, right now Colombia is applying some harm reduction initiatives, and it's not something that is widely known, not even talked about, but it is within the policy. It's called mitigation. It's not called like that. It's not called risk reduction or harm reduction, but it's called mitigation. It's being done. So there has been some progress, and I think the problem specifically with the public health approach in Colombia is not too much political, it's more a resource issue. And it's also very much related with the problems of the health system, which have been for a long time going on.
June, I do believe that the role of mayors and municipalities is significant in implementing drug policies and, more broadly, anti-crime policies. Whether it's what happened after Operation Orion in Medellin or examples like in Pasto, Nariño, that we spoke about. That said, I guess I overall agree with Daniel's point that the mayor of Bogota should not be overestimated as a voice in shaping national policy. Nonetheless, it is a significant platform, so there will be echoes resonating from that platform. I would not say that it's the central or one of the central actors in setting national policies, but certainly mayors will have a lot of opportunity and responsibility to implement policies in many aspects of it, whether this is rural development, getting access to titles and microcredit, or whether this is going after bandas, or if FARC persists, will they in the reserve zones, if they come to be materialized, what will be the relationship between the municipal authorities and the reserve zones, et cetera. Ginny, I know I owe you a question on the aerial spraying and the US. Well, the U.S., when the Colombian government issued the proclamation that they are suspending aerial spraying, at least with glyphosate, which was the original formulation, there was a lot of opposition in the U.S. government to that, both behind the scenes, and the U.S. embassy then came out with a statement saying that they disagree with the policy, but nonetheless, Colombia has a right to set the policy. And so the U.S. wasn't thrilled. But at the end of the day, it swallowed it, and it really did not take any punitive action, very different than would have been the case, say, in 2002, 2003, should the country decide to do that. More globally, the United States has not implemented aerial spraying in Afghanistan, and in fact has opposed aerial spraying when countries like Russia pressed for it and defunded centrally led eradication. That said, Mexico is once again resorting to aerial spraying of poppy, and the U.S. is certainly not telling Mexico this is an unwise prioritization of your counter-drug policies. So I think the U.S. is willing to accept far greater diversity of attitudes, at least during the Obama administration, than was the case before.
Once again, Harold, thank you again for hosting us and for the partnership. I just want to take a minute to just touch upon what Francisco mentioned, because it's, you know, what he was saying about Colombia, you can apply to a lot of other countries. We look at issues of citizen insecurity in Central America, and we talk always about the structural drivers, right? We tend to focus too much on the symptoms of the problem and not really the drivers, the structural, social, economic drivers of this. At the end of the day, to answer my own question is, you know, is it lack of political will? Is it the resources? At the end of the day, it is hard politically and otherwise to deal with the structural challenges, right? Electoral cycles do not permit for governments to deal with electoral, you know, with structural challenges. And at the end of the day, yes, can we make a difference, Ana Maria? I think we can with the right policies. But let's not fool ourselves, right? At the end of the day, the issues of inequality, of corruption, of poverty, of exclusion and disaffection, these are challenges that if they're not addressed, and they're going to be have to be addressed over the long term, we're going to continue seeing these problems. I don't want to dismiss the report, but at the end of the day, a sustainable resolution to this problem is to deal with the structural drivers as we see them in Colombia or in other places in Central America, and I suspect in other parts of the world. Not to end on a pessimistic note, but I think one has to be realistic. Hey, thank you again.
Okay. Thank you, Frank, and thank you to the Kimberly Green Latin America and Caribbean Center for partnering with us on this event. And I encourage those of you interested in drug policy to check out the Improving Global Drug Policy paper series we have available on our website at brookings.edu/global drug policy. And thank you for joining us.